Advanced Organics.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Kurt Southerly joining us on the PowerCast with Gene and Chris, focusing on first the amazing sighting that started it all, although maybe not in historical sense, but certainly in the popular media, flying saucers seen by Kenneth Arnold, and then his involvement in the Maury Island affair. Really, really strange. So Chrisman tells a different story, Kurt, than Dahl?
His story is, his story kind of reinforces Dahl's. He basically tells Arnold that Dahl came to me and said he had this sighting that the boat was damaged by slag falling from one of the objects, which appeared to be in trouble. And then he says, I didn't really believe him, so I went back out there and found this stuff laying all over the shore at Maury Island and saw one of these objects myself. But he comes back and he tells Arnold this, or he shows up the next morning at the hotel room, gets Arnold out of bed, tells him the story. And by the time he leaves, Arnold is freaking out. He's thinking, I don't know what to do. I don't really like these guys. I don't really trust them. I mean, he's not saying this aloud, obviously. He's thinking all of this at the time.
Now, this is largely based also on his account in that book, The Coming of the Saucers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's part of the account in his book. It's also something that he told me during the interview, and it's also something that he's reported on in other places since. Anyway, he also told me during the interview that, by the way, the information that he put in The Coming of the Saucers, the quotes that he has in there, the comments, they weren't made up. He actually took a small reel-to-reel tape recorder with him. He said it was one of the earliest of its kind, and he said he just wanted people to be aware of that so that they wouldn't think that he made all this stuff up. So everything that happened in the room, the various interviews he had recorded, it'd be interesting to know if those records are still around someplace, if those tapes would still be available. Then anyway, again, I'm digressing. I mean, he talks to Dahl, he talks to Chrisman, and he's freaking out, and he decides, I need help. So for some reason, he thinks of Captain E.J. Smith, this airline pilot who had spotted flying saucers and whom he had met when they were looking at the photo taken by the Coast Guardsman. So he calls Smith. And Smith, as it turns out, has the day off. He flies up to, I guess he flies into Oregon to pick him up, flies Smith back to the hotel room. They're camped out in the room, and they're discussing all of this. The next day, Chrisman and Dahl both show up, tell the whole story over again. So you have these four guys sitting in the room. Chrisman and Dahl leave, and Arnold and Smith are sitting there they're puzzling over all of this, and they get a phone call. And it's a phone call from a guy named Ted Morello, who is in the UPI office, strangely enough, right across the street from where the Winthrop Hotel was located. And he says, you guys are in there talking about flying saucers. And Arnold said, what do you mean? He says, look, he said, I know what you're talking about. He said, somebody is calling here telling me verbatim what you guys are discussing in the room. He said, it's like your room's bugged.
That's pretty bizarre. I mean, that really makes you wonder how involved the military intelligence folks or the intelligence operatives. This is pre-CIA. Could have been FBI. Do we have any indication who this could have been?
Well, nobody really seems to know. There's some indication, and I'm kind of getting to this, there's some indication that Smith himself may have been an informant. But in any event, at that point, when they get off the phone with Morello, they literally tore the room apart looking for some kind of bugging devices. They didn't find anything. Now, from what I understand, this was like a third floor room, and it was in a corner, and they didn't, I guess there were no other rooms available, so they couldn't simply move to a different location. They were stuck in that room. And
now, in terms of bugs, understand, ladies and gentlemen, this is the late 1940s. We're not talking about these microscopic radio transmitters you can stick inside a light bulb base or something.
Right. This would have been something fairly sizable, something that with a thorough search you should have been able to find. Anyway, there were subsequent interviews with Dahl and Chrisman, and the whole scenario got worse and got stranger and stranger. At one point, Chrisman brought a box of these slag-like samples into the room. So they had samples of this mysterious substance, which looked like slag from a smelter from something that was just dumped out of a furnace at an ore site. They had the stuff scattered all over the room. And Chrisman claimed that he had sent some of this stuff back to some lab, back east someplace to some lab, asking to have it tested, but he hadn't gotten any kind of response on this yet. There's some rumors that he actually sent some of this stuff to Ray Palmer, although I don't know if that's ever been verified or not. In any case, by this time, with the whole business with Arnold and Smith, they're both freaking out, or at least that's the way it seems to Arnold. There are different times when Smith, and I'm kind of jumping around here because I'm trying to reconstruct this from memory, a lot of it. There were times when Smith and Chrisman would leave the room, and at one point they left for quite a few hours, and supposedly Chrisman drove Smith back to Seattle so that he could pick up some personal items and bring his car back, because Arnold had flown up there and brought him back, I guess, in short notice. But in any case, on at least two occasions, Smith and Chrisman left the room for an extended period of time together, and there's some suspicion as to whether these guys knew each other or not, knew each other previously. Anyway, this Ted Morello kept calling and saying, I'm still getting a mysterious caller telling me verbatim what you guys are talking about. Then they get a phone call from a guy named Ted Lance, I think his name was. He was a local reporter for the local paper. He called and he said that he was getting calls from a mysterious informant, and that he knew they were talking about flying saucers. Well, they hung up on him, or Arnold hung up on him. The next day, this Lance guy shows up at the room. Smith frisks him and kicks him out of the room. Well, later on, and of course I'm jumping ahead again, later on Lance wrote a newspaper story, and then he subsequently ended up dying under mysterious circumstances.
Mysterious circumstances in what respect?
Well, there are different stories. There was one story that he died in a car crash. There's another story that he died of an extended illness, which was supposedly meningitis, but it took weeks before the coroner's report came back on this. Nobody really knows. And he was not an old guy. He was a fairly young man, and he shouldn't have died when he did, but there was just one of many things that occurred during this period of time that were very, very strange. And again, I'm getting ahead of myself again, so I need to kind of back up. When all of this was going on with the bugging, that's when Arnold finally decided it's time to call in some professionals. He remembered the phone number he had for the two Army Air Force officers. He called, I guess it was Davidson he called, and he called him at McCord Field, which is today McCord Air Force Base. And when Davidson answered the phone, he said, look, I want to talk to you about this, but not at this moment. He said, let me call you from a different phone. He actually left his office, went to a different, I guess, to a payphone and called Arnold back. It was almost as though he was worried that his phone was bugged. So this whole thing, then, Arnold made a point of this during the interview, and I think he also made a point of it in his book, The Coming of the Saucers. This was something that really freaked the guy out, that he's trying to talk to this Army officer about his room being bugged and about these two shady characters who are telling him this story, and he doesn't know what to believe. And this Army officer is basically saying, look, maybe this isn't a secure line. Let me call it from a different phone line. So anyway, these two guys show up, Davidson and Brown, the two Army officers. They interview Chrisman and Dahl. Chrisman tells them, actually, Dahl takes off when he finds out that the Army is showing up. He splits. He don't want anything to do with this. Chrisman sits and talks to these two guys. As soon as he's done with his story, they look at each other, and they make an excuse to leave. Like, look, well, we got to leave. We flew in on an Army transport. We need to get this plane back to an air show the next day. Supposedly it was the ceremony for Air Force Day, for the Air Force separating from the Army at that time. They were becoming a separate entity, and they did in 1947. And they used this as an excuse to leave. The feeling you get from this is that these two guys picked something up in Chrisman's narrative that didn't make sense to them, or that they felt was very suspicious.
You know what's suspicious? That is the weight that the advertisers have to endure at this point. We have Kurt Sutherly with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
You expect professional service from your doctor, your accountant, and even the girl who takes your morning coffee order. Why not from your domain registrar, too? Namecheap.com provides stellar service with no sneaky upselling. We offer more features and security options for your website than there are ways to order a latte. And new domains come with WhoisGuard to protect your personal info. At Namecheap.com, you can get your domain for as low as $2.99. Now is a great time to get to know Namecheap.com.
Did you know that how well your brain works is directly dependent upon how well your gut works? Did you know that an inflamed or compromised digestive system directly contributes to poor focus, depression, irritability, attention deficit, and hyperactivity? By eliminating the inflammation in your intestines and by having good bacteria populations, you may enjoy better brain function. The most important protein your body needs to keep inflammation down is glutathione. The number one food to support a dramatic increase in glutathione production is undamaged whey protein from grass-fed cows. Virtually all whey proteins are damaged by heat, filtration, and chemicals, except one. One World Whey is the most life-giving whey protein on the market. It is changing the lives of its users in very positive ways. One World Whey may act as one of the most important health foods to support your and your child's optimal brain function. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworldwhey.com.
Would it save you time to get the best quality water filters and the best quality storable foods from one company? You bet it would, and now you can at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Big Berkey water filter products and great-tasting, long-lasting, storable, wise foods are both now available on one website, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Wise foods, ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches and come with a 25-year shelf life. Big Berkey water filters are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. Combine Berkey water filters with Wise foods for an unbeatable preparedness combination. Get free shipping on every order over $50. And GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit Big, B-E-R-K-E-Y, waterfilters.com. Or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Or go to BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com.
What if pain could be reduced, ailments could be alleviated, physical and mental stress could be eased, and blood circulation increase, all by simply lying down? Introducing the original Biomat. The Biomat is an FDA-registered medical device that combines deep-penetrating infrared space-age technology and revitalizing negative ions with the incredible healing power of amethyst crystals. A Biomat can boost your immune system, relieve pain and stiffness, reduce stress and fatigue, and assist in detoxifying your body. Join the thousands of people reporting relief from chronic pain, fibromyalgia, arthritis, sports injuries, insomnia, and much more. Each Biomat comes with a lifetime trade-in and three-year warranty. Learn more at Biomat.com, spelled Biomat.com, or call 360-944-8692. That's 360-944-8692. Visit Biomat.com today and enhance your life with a Biomat.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
We have Kurt Suffley with Gene and Chris and the Paracast retracing the incredible Maury Island incident and what happened. All this byplay that reads almost like a spy novel, doesn't it?
Maybe a spy novel, other than that even.
Yeah, like something out of the X-Files.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Chris Carter, the creator of the X-Files, could have used this as a template for the whole series. Maybe he did.
Right.
We were talking about the fact that the two Army officers left after listening to Chrisman give his rendition for the UFO sighting that he and Dahl supposedly experienced, or actually the two separate sightings. Anyway, they seemed to pick up on something in Chrisman's story that didn't make sense or that they didn't believe, so they decided, okay, we're leaving.
Do you know what that factor is? Does the book go into it?
No. And Arnold himself didn't know. I asked him about this, and he said that the only thing they would say was, look, we can't stick around. We have to get our plane back to the airfield because tomorrow is Air Force Day. We need it as part of a celebration, which didn't make any sense. I mean,
They did take the box of flag with them.
Yes, they did. Well, and they only took that because Chrisman forced it on them. He basically, I think it was like a couple of boxes, he basically said, look, you know, before you guys take off, I want you to take this stuff with you. And he kind of forced them to take it along. Anyway, they got in their plane. It was an old bomber, and flew out of there. And the next day, Paul Lance was the name of this reporter. Lance writes this story. They get up, there's a story in the local paper about this Army plane exploding or crashing, and these guys dying in it. And he identifies the two Army Corps officers, even though the military had not yet released their identity. And later he said he got it from a mysterious informant who called the newspaper office.
Now, understand here, in normal practice, I don't know if this was in effect then, but now you don't disclose the names of the deceased in some kind of accident until, number one, their family has been notified officially. So in the case here, he kind of jumped the gun, huh?
Yeah. Well, at the time, you know, reporters could do that kind of thing and get away with it. He had a source, even though it was an anonymous source, and he really didn't care. He just thought this is a great story. His editor obviously approved it, and they ran it. It ran headline front page. They cited the mysterious informant as saying that the plane may have been shot down by gunfire. Subsequent investigation by the military, I guess they disclosed that it was an exhaust stack on one of the engines caught fire, basically ended up tearing the entire wing off the aircraft, and the plane crashed. There were two Army Air Corps pilot the officers, I guess they were flying as pilot and co-pilot, and there were two passengers on board the plane. There was a tech sergeant, if I remember correctly, and a sergeant who, those two, they parachuted out of the aircraft. Now, the youngest of the four, the sergeant, was a hitchhiker. He was flying, he was getting a free shuttle service by the military from one point to another on board this aircraft. They got out, they parachuted to safety. The two Army officers apparently didn't even attempt to parachute out, and that's a big question mark today yet. Why didn't these guys try to get out of that aircraft? From what I understand, in 2007, investigators went back and recombed that location, and they were able to find some bits of debris from the aircraft.
Yeah, that was the UFO hunters.
Yeah, I think
that was their pilot episode.
Yeah, but from what I understand, the initial investigation of the crash, I guess they removed most of the debris, and I guess if there was any fragments from this alleged UFO on board, that was taken away during the initial investigation. But in any case, you have all of this. Yeah, these two guys dead. Arnold and Smith are in the office. Dahl has disappeared. He doesn't. He's gone. Chrisman supposedly gets recalled to military duty and is sent off to Alaska. Meanwhile, Ted Morello, the UPI reporter, is telling Arnold, "Look, I'm trying." He's saying, "I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. I'm using all my network of sources and informants to try to find out what's going on here, who the mystery informant is. I'm getting nowhere. If I were you, I'd leave town." So finally, they decide, okay, we're going to get out of town. Arnold decides he wants to say goodbye to Dahl. So now I have to back up on something. A couple of days earlier, they were in town for like 3-4 days during this whole scenario. When Dahl first talked to Arnold, he wanted to, I don't know what he wanted to show him, but he suggested that Arnold come out to a house occupied by his secretary. This was supposedly in one of the more rundown areas of town. And anyway, Arnold got in the car. They drove over to this place, and he said it was like a house from like a 1912, 1917 era, something like that, beat-up place, furnished with odds and ends of furniture. There was a woman working there, and I guess she was supposedly the secretary for their lumber mill scavenging operation. And I'm not sure what it was Dahl wanted to show him at that time, but Arnold was there. He took a careful look around. He decided the place looked like it was ready to fall apart. Later, when he decided he wanted to say, before he left, he told Smith, he said, "I'm going to say goodbye to Dahl." He said, for some reason, I guess he trusted him more than he trusted Chrisman. He sort of liked the guy, even though he was kind of leery of him at the same time. He drove out to the house, and the place was empty. And not only was it empty, there were cobwebs all over the place. He said later, it looked like it had not been lived in for 3 months. There was not a stick of furniture in the place. There was nobody there. The door was standing ajar when he drove up.
Okay, this is the address then that Dahl had given to him.
Yeah, this was the place.
But he never visited it before.
Actually, he did, yeah. He had gone out there with him.
At that time, it didn't look like it hadn't been occupied in 3 months.
It was decrepit, but it was furnished and it was clean.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden, a couple of days later, the place is completely empty and covered with cobwebs and dirt, like it had not been inhabited for months.
Like he went into a time warp.
Yeah, exactly. this is one of the freakier things of this whole episode. I mean, hey, Arnold couldn't explain it. Nobody's been able to explain it. Most people don't even acknowledge that this is part of the scenario. This is just something that is so out there that it's better off, most people figure it's better off just ignoring it than to try to fit it into the rest of the scenario, even though the rest of the scenario is strange enough.
Now, the strange enough thing happened, and let's kind of move the narrative along here, and that is when Arnold left, he ran into a problem with his plane.
Yes, he did. He landed at a small airport about halfway home. He needed to stop for fuel. When he went to take off, the engine seized up. He was only a couple of hundred feet in the air. The engine seized up, shut off, and he was able to effect a fairly safe crash landing. I guess one of his landing struts was damaged, but other than that, he was okay, and he was able to repair the aircraft fairly quickly and get on home. He said, when I asked him about this, he said his fuel switch was shut off. How this happened, he doesn't know.
Now, the fuel switch is something turned on manually.
Yes, it was a manual switch.
So subconsciously, he would have had to have turned off that switch for this to have happened. And we'll get into more details of this in a moment. We have Kurt Southerly with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
So you're a maker of something. Woodcrafts, fishing lures, glass designs, jewelry, purses, perfumes, goat's milk, soap. Whatever it is, you made it here in America. Now you're eager for people to buy your products right here locally, instead of buying competing products made on the other side of the world, right? Then you need to check out localmakers.com. Support America. Buy and sell locally at localmakers.com. Doesn't matter if you're a home-based business or a major manufacturer, localmakers.com offers an easy way to connect with customers within your local community, as well as across the U.S., simply by entering a zip code. And there's no cost to join. So if you're a maker who needs buyers, go to localmakers.com and stock your products on one of our shelves. Localmakers.com, promoting, preserving, and supporting your neighbor's manufacturing businesses.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TERRAGANIX.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
What you're about to hear will help you remember where to find the best water filter products at the best prices on the web. There. Did you hear it? BerkeyShop.com. With the newest Berkey products in stock, the best prices on Berkey products anywhere, fast free shipping, and the most amazing customer service. BerkeyShop.com. Home of all Berkey water filter products like the Big Berkey for producing clean drinking water by removing contaminants, chemicals, heavy metals, and even fluoride. Call 1-888-6-BERKEY to get your Berkey water filter. Perfect for home, travel, camping, or disasters. And BerkeyShop.com is the perfect site to get your Berkey because we're open 24/7 with free shipping and no sales tax. Even celebrities and NFL athletes shop at BerkeyShop.com. Call 1-888-6-BERKEY to order your Berkey products. That's 888-6-BERKEY or go to BerkeyShop.com. 888-6-BERKEY or go to BerkeyShop.com. For everything Berkey, shop BerkeyShop.com.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
With Gene, with Chris, we have Kurt Sutherland trying to remember the strange mystery of Maury Island and Kenneth Arnold's participation. So that's the point to bring up over and over again. We have an experienced pilot, and I assume then that the plane doesn't take off unless you turn on the fuel switch.
Exactly. I mean, you need to hit the fuel switch in order to fire up the engine, and obviously he did this. The engine fired up. He had just filled up the fuel tank, and he flew out of there, and it shut off. And he didn't realize until later that the fuel switch was turned off again. And he doesn't know how this happened. He doesn't have any recollection of having done it himself. It's just another one of these bizarre things that occurred. And anyway, he landed safely, took care of what minor repairs needed to be taken care of, and flew on home, and pretty much tried to put the whole episode behind him. He conferred some with Ray Palmer, and to tell you the truth, I don't think he ever actually did put together a detailed report on all of this for Palmer. Well, actually, they did the collaboration with the coming of the saucers, because it was included in their book, but he never actually did an article for the magazine.
Did he ever have a subsequent comment about what's in the book, or just affirm what he wrote there?
When I talked to him, he just reiterated several times, like, look, this stuff happened. You know, you can believe it or you cannot believe it. You know, I'm sick of reporters dogging me. In fact, when I talked to him, the only way I was able to actually get him to agree to talk to me at all was simply by kind of making him aware that I was sympathetic to what he had experienced and that I was also an aviation enthusiast. In fact, about the first 5 or 10 minutes of the phone conversation, we just discussed aircraft and aviation. I had been a crew chief in the Air Force on fighter aircraft. When I was a kid, I lived a quarter of a mile from an airport. I used to beg rides from pilots and Cessnas and Piper Cubs all the time. And when I brought this to his attention, His attitude Nick before that was kind of like, why should I even talk to you? You're just another reporter. I hang up on reporters. I'm sick of reporters. All they do is hound me. He pretty much said that. And as I explained to him, I said, look, I said, I've read your book, and I'm sympathetic to what you must have gone through, and I'd love to hear more. And then we talked. Basically, he just restated pretty much everything that he had stated in the book. And he said, I'm at the point in my life, he said, where I just don't, he said, I don't really think about it a whole lot. He said, it's history. He said, it was strange. And I asked him about Smith. I said, you still keep in touch? And he said, they had up to that point. This was back in, it was in 1975 or 76 when I interviewed him.
Okay, so we're talking at a time here where he was in his mid to late
60s. Yeah, and at the time, I guess, Smith had retired as an airline pilot, and he had been invited to his retirement ceremony, but something there was some kind of conflicting schedule, and he couldn't make it. And he just, you know, pretty much, I guess at that point, that was pretty much the last they had been in touch with one another. But the fact that Smith kept disappearing with Chrisman, that somebody was informing the local media, the local press, as to what was going on in the room, that they couldn't find any bugging devices. It almost points a finger at Smith.
Now, did Arnold ever feel that Smith had betrayed him?
No, he didn't. He liked Smith. I mean, he liked the man immensely, and in all honesty, I don't think he would have admitted that had he even suspected it. He liked the man too much. He told me, he said, from the moment I met this guy, he said he was just a very, very likable man. They immediately bonded. They were like personalities. They had the same kind of sense of humor. Of course, they were both pilots. They had many things in common. And it was just one of those happy friendships that the man fell into at that point in time. Unfortunately, maybe it wasn't just a happy friendship. Maybe he was set up. Nobody really knows.
But he didn't want to think that. He wanted to take the innocent viewpoint, which is, this is my friend, and that's it. Did he ever try to speculate about what Chrisman and Smith were talking about during their absences?
No, he never really did speculate about that. I don't think he wanted to speculate about it. He didn't want to think badly of Smith. And even if Smith had been going off to confer with Chrisman, and even if he was the informant, the mystery man, filling the media in on what was going on, I mean, what was Arnold going to do about it? I do know one thing. One of the things that Arnold brought up, and I think he mentioned this in his book as well, his buddy Colonel Wieland had given him a 32 caliber revolver to carry with him for personal protection. Again, this was during a different era when you didn't need a permit to carry a concealed firearm. He just simply carried it. And he had it with him in the hotel room, and when Smith discovered he had a gun on him, he was kind of aghast at this. I think it actually stunned him, and Arnold admitted that. He said it was like Smith was totally dumbfounded that it was carrying a gun. He didn't make any further bones about it, but the fact that he found out this guy that he had hooked up with in the room was carrying a gun kind of shocked him, and I guess he really didn't know what to do about that. So, but there were so many little elements to this whole thing, and it really does smack of something out of the X-Files. But there was one other thing, too. Before Arnold and Smith left town, before Chrisman and Dahl kind of disappeared, and I guess Dahl was later located sitting in a movie theater at the end of all of this. He used to go to this particular theater all the time, and after Arnold had gone to this house that turned out to be empty, he later found Dahl in this movie theater, and Dahl just basically said, "Let me alone. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I don't want to be bothered with it." Dahl's voice supposedly had run off, and there was an FBI report that was later released under the Freedom of Information Act. And according to the FBI report, the boy, I guess, was found in Montana or someplace. Now, there were reports that the boy had suffered from amnesia.
Now, the thing I wonder about here is the strange things that went on. Being basically, they have eavesdropping going on. You have the house, which suddenly is changed. It kind of smells a little bit like some kind of crazy intelligence operation where somebody was playing a game.
It exactly does. And there was a major sander that was brought into this by Smith. This was when Smith disappeared at one point. He actually admitted that he had contacted somebody else in Army Intelligence, and it was this Major Sander who showed up. I guess it was on the day that Smith and Arnold decided to get out of town after they'd been warned repeatedly they should get out of town. Sander took them to a smelting plant outside of the city, and he had had samples. They still had a few samples of this material that Chrisman had brought in, and Sander had, he took them to this smelting plant. And Arnold later said that there were piles of slag-like material laying all over the place. Sander took them up to one particular pile, which looked very much like the stuff that Chrisman had. And Arnold smelled a rat. He wanted to look at some of the other sample piles that were laying around, and Sander got them out of there. He wouldn't let them look at anything else. He just, they hustled, I guess they were actually in a military car. He hustled them back into the car, and they left.
Now, I have to ask you a question here as we go along here. And that is, there was a dust-up, or at least a one-side dust-up, between Ray Palmer and Edward Ruppelt. Because in the book, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects by Edward Ruppelt, he talked of Maury Allen as a hoax and, in a sense, implicated Palmer as someone responsible for this hoax. Did Arnold have any feelings or mention anything about Ruppelt?
No, he didn't. He didn't mention Ruppelt at all, and he didn't think that Palmer was anything maybe more than a dupe, that he was simply duped by the letter that Chrisman initially sent him, and Chrisman pretty much admitted to the FBI when the Fed sat down, local agent sat down, interviewed both Dahl and Chrisman separately, and they kind of said, or I should say Chrisman said to the agent, he said, I tailored the letter to what I thought this guy Palmer would want to hear. You know, he knew Palmer was into flying saucers, UFOs, strange phenomena.
So he's trying to pull one over on Ray Palmer.
That's what it sounded like. And that was the sense that the FBI agent had gotten out of this, too, that this was they basically used Palmer as a way to further whatever objective they had in mind.
Okay, we'll have to look into that objective and where it might have gone or is going or has gone. Wherever you want to say about it with Kurt Southerly and Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio, starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Are you having trouble paying your mortgage? Maybe your mortgage loan is upside down or in foreclosure. Maybe the bank already foreclosed on you. Don't sit around being a victim of bank fraud. Fight back. We have the tools to help you fight back. Here's how. Go to InspectorAudit.com and click on the GCN Radio Special. Order a summary audit. Find the real truth about your loan.
Maybe, like me, you'll find your bank loan was paid off already. Maybe, like me, you'll find your bank defrauded you at the closing. And maybe, like me, you will go after them.
Did you know 78% of home loans in the last 10 years violated consumer credit laws? We should not let the banks get away with this fraud. Go to InspectorAudit.com and click on the GCN Radio Special. Order a summary audit today and find the truth about your mortgage loan. That's InspectorAudit.com or call 855-373-4948. That's 1-855-373-4948.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television, so from outside it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your fake TV for only $34.95, go to faketv.com or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional fake TV is only $29.95, so get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to faketv.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
Iodine protection packs from HempUSA.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So was Maury Island really an insidious hoax that unfortunately resulted in the deaths of a couple of people and might have claimed a third had Arnold not made that crash landing? We have Kurt Southerly with Gene and Chris trying to sort out this mystery. So in retrospect here, who was Fred Lee Chrisman? I mean, this guy shows up allegedly as a possible suspect or person of interest in the Kennedy assassination. He had a talk show, you know, even passing Arnold, and we'll get on to Chrisman in a moment. So Arnold basically tells you in your conversation, everything in that book is it. He doesn't have much more to add. Now, Arnold himself, he, I guess, was sort of a UFO investigator for a while. Then he drifted away. He tried to run for lieutenant governor of his home state, and he lost. Maybe because he was the flying saucer candidate?
That's very possible. Well, with the public, who knows? I would say that probably didn't help his chances any.
You don't think it would? So now,
probably not.
Now, as far as Arnold's own reaction, what did he think was responsible for Maury Island and all the things that happened? Did he have a final opinion when you talked to him, what, 25, 28 years later?
He was just completely baffled. Even after all those years, he was absolutely baffled by everything that happened. The fact that somebody was contacting the local media, the local press, I should say, because there really wasn't media per se in that time other than radio, that Arnold and Chrisman, he had this strong feeling that these two guys were up to something, that the story they were giving him was so much BS, but he couldn't prove it. And he really, I think deep down, he really was hoping that what they were telling him was the truth, because it would have been something to further corroborate his own sighting.
And is that why he did this, because he was hoping to validate what happened to him?
I think partly. He didn't say that, but I got the sense that, yeah, maybe that was partly the case. But again, it goes back to the fact that this guy was a true patriot. I mean, if he had not injured his knee early on when he was playing football, I mean, he was a world-class athlete in other ways. I mean, this guy could have been Captain America. You know, that's the kind of person he was. You know, you dig into this guy's background, and I'm sure whatever dossier that the feds may have put together on him, that's probably what they summed this up as. You know, that this guy is a true blue patriot. He's an American spirit. He has nothing but the good of the country at heart. And he ends up getting caught up in this, whatever was going on out in Tacoma with Fred Christman and Harold Dahl. And the more you look at it, the more it looks like this was something that Christman orchestrated, maybe at the behest of somebody else. Because there, and you had just touched on this briefly, there are stories that Christman may have been some sort of government operative. He was subpoenaed during the Garrison investigation of the Kennedy assassination, as supposedly he was one of the mysterious tramps that showed up at Dealey Plaza, who was, I guess, identified in one of the photos as being such. And later, he, when he was supposed to have gone off to Alaska after being reinducted in the military at the end of the whole Margaret Island episode, the rumors suggest that he didn't go to Alaska. He ended up in Korea. And it, nobody really seems to know exactly where this guy was for a period of time. And then suddenly he ends up back in Tacoma again. He takes on the persona of a radio, a late night radio talk show host. I guess John Gold was his name. And he was a real son of a bitch, you know, on the air. And supposedly he was shot at several times, probably because of his abrasive nature on the air.
Was he like an early Howard Stern?
Yeah, yeah, that's the sense you get of this. He was very much your almost your stereotypical Howard Stern kind of character.
Shock jock.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But he predated all of these people by a good many years. And he pissed some people off, and supposedly, I think it was John Keel actually dug into that a little bit and said that that Christman was shot at, probably because of some comments he made about somebody on the air. But again, there was so much about this guy that was just strange and vague, and you do get the sense that he was a player, maybe like a mid-level player in some higher game.
He was like an early Richard Doty.
Yeah, but who? I mean, who exactly he worked for? Was it, did he work for the CIA? Did he work for, you know, for somebody else? I mean, the FBI, the field agent that investigated, he put in the report that he was convinced that these two guys were not telling the entire truth about what they knew, that they were either making something up, or they were just, you know, they were just not telling everything.
Before we go back to that, let's kind of wrap up with Kenneth Arnold. At the end of his days, and you talked to him a few years before he passed, did he have a final opinion as to what was responsible for UFOs?
No, he didn't. He was not the kind of guy that was going to venture an opinion like that. He said at the time he felt that this had to be some sort of foreign aircraft, and they kept going back to the idea that this was something that the Russians had manufactured, because that was at the point in time where the hostilities between our country and the Soviet Union were starting to really emerge.
So he didn't think in terms of ET at all.
No, he didn't really. I think that was something that was kind of put into his head during the weeks and the months that followed, when all of the other sightings began to occur, when people were, they started talking about flying saucers and unidentified flying objects. And I guess we also had, during that period, the various green fireball sightings that were occurring in the Southwest.
Right.
So there was a lot of really weird things were happening.
Was he aware of the Horton Brothers flying wing design that was operational in the mid to late 40s?
You know, I never, that's a good question. I never thought to ask him that. But having been a private pilot, a professional pilot in many ways, I'm sure he was. I mean, there were very few pilots during that period that didn't know about the Horton brothers. And for your listeners, the Horton brothers were German innovators who developed the original flying wing. They also had a number of other designs that were very, very well in advance of their time. And I mean, there were rumors that they were actually brought back to this country, and that they worked on the original flying wing that was developed by the Air Force, or I should say, I guess it was actually developed by Northrop Aviation for the Air Force.
And yeah, because the flying wing did look a lot like the drawings that were made of the Arnold incident.
Yeah, I think if you study the specifications, the dimensions are very similar as well. But that whole business of the flying wing, that the original flying wing that the Air Force was flying, they had a number of accidents with that. One pilot was killed, and when he died, they renamed Muroc Airfield in his honor. His name, he was a Captain Edwards, and then renamed Muroc Airfield Edwards Air Force Base, or Edwards Field at the time. But I guess many years later, when Jim Northrop, I guess his name was, the head of the company, when he was dying, he said on his deathbed that Stuart Symington, who was the Secretary of the Air Force at the time, canceled the flying wing program for no particular reason. It was all political. And it kind of makes you wonder, because they ended up literally destroying virtually every flying wing that had been operational. They had built first reciprocating models. There were two or three of those. Then I think one or two of them were converted to jet aircraft, and they flew fairly well. And all of that was destroyed until today, until the 1990s, I should say, when they built the new B-2, which again is simply a variation on that design. Again, the dimensions are almost the same. So all of this does trace back kind of to the Horton brothers during World War II.
Now, looking over Arnold, did he ever voice any comments or opinions about Ray Palmer? Because Palmer, of course, had some pretty exotic things to say about UFOs.
Now, his contact with Palmer was limited. It was simply that scenario where he ended up going and doing the investigation for Palmer. And then, of course, when they got together, and I get the feeling that Palmer pretty much wrote the book, but he just simply wrote it with Arnold's input.
So basically Arnold may have given him the notes and the information, maybe the recordings, and Palmer wrote. It's kind of like Shaver, kind of like the Shaver mystery, where Ray Palmer wrote all this stuff under the signature of Richard Shaver, but he, of course, just took Shaver's notes, which were very rough. Shaver was not a really great fiction writer or a great writer in general. I guess he was better in his later years. By the way, there are lots of ways to contact us here at the Paracast. You can write us news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. You can send us a tweet, The Paracast. What else can we be? The Paracast on Twitter. Or check out our forums, forum.theparacast.com. Once again, that's forum.theparacast.com. Sign up. Get in on all the action. We have Kurt Sutherly joining us, Gene and Chris, on
The Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24/7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.